Welcome to Trashy Divorces, episode 3.
It's all about fame.
I'm gonna
live forever.
I'm gonna be in the press forever.
There you go. That is what it's about.
And people will never let it die.
So we've got one story about a person who desperately wants to be in the public eye at all times for all sorts of reasons. And
I guess one person that really regrets that happened to her marriage, and she wishes she could be out of the public eye because she never left it after it happened.
There you go.
Jeez.
Mirror images.
It's fame.
It's fame.
Welcome to Trashy Divorces, y'all. Fame. I wanna live forever. I'm gonna learn how to cry. I'm gonna file some court papers. I'm not gonna keep your name. Fame! I don't know. Welcome to Trashy Divorces.
Welcome to Trashy Divorces.
Episode 3, y'all, coming in hot. Who's famous in your star loop this week, Stacey?
Oh my God, Alicia. I am so excited about this story just because I feel like it is the heart and soul of what Trashy Divorces is all about.
Really? I have the song that's the heart and soul of Trashy Divorces in my story. So we have a visual representation.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
A little song. We're trying to fulfill all your senses, listeners.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, no visual, obviously, because podcast, but, you know, what can you do?
Okay. Why is your person the soul of Trashy Divorces?
Because my person is Bethany Frankel of The Real Housewives of New York City. Yeah, and this is Bethany Frankel's made-for-TV divorce, which was just a fucking miserable thing. Like, let's be super honest. Like, this is, as far as, like, just the anodyne things of a divorce go, this could not have been more horrible.
Ooh.
So,
can I preface that I don't know much about The Housewives?
Yeah, you know, it's probably worth noting, I don't watch reality TV, so, like, all of this is from, like, print media and web media.
Which is most of our sort, like, we read books, we do research,
yeah.
We go through archives, like, we're really researching some of the neatest bits of stories.
Right.
But for listeners who are fans of the Real Housewife conglomerate,
you can write in with whatever criticisms
we
you...
Should apologize beforehand? But the one housewife I know, sure as fuck.
Is it Bethany Frankel?
It's Bethany Frankel and Skinny Girl. And her divorce took an even longer time than Charlie Sheen. Like, she's the one that I've got the most... She's doing fame right. I know about her.
Well,
talk to me. Talk to me. Trashy divorce.
All right. So to set this up. So Bethany Frankel, who, according to the webpage I pulled up over there, is 48 years old right now.
Happy 48, sister.
So... there are people in the world who have a plan. And in the case of the Real Housewife of New York City, Bethany Frankel...
She had a plan.
She had a plan to be somebody.
It's our New Year's episode. Goals are good.
Goals are good. And, like, there's a good reason for that, right? Like, she had a bad childhood. Her dad left early. Parents divorced. Mom remarried, but it was an unhappy marriage. And there was a lot of fighting. And
okay.
So basically, Bethany graduates college and is like, I'm fucking out of here, and heads to LA where she's going to strike it rich in Hollywood.
Wow. So, like, a childhood where you, as soon as you can get out, you do.
Yes.
You are planning your escape.
But I think she went to, like, Boston University or, like, she went to a good... Yeah, anyway, so she heads to Hollywood.
She's seeking fame and fortune.
It's the early 90s. She gets some sort of, like, low-grade backstage, like, production assistant role on Saved by the Bell.
Sweet.
Right? Yeah, so that show wrapped up in the early early 90s. Anyway, whatever. She ends up as Kathy Hilton's personal assistant... And is, like, as part of her job, like, picking up...
Kathy Hilton, who's the wife or ex-wife of Hilton Chain.
Hilton Hotels.
Okay.
And the mother of Paris Hilton and Nikki Hilton.
Got it.
So, yeah. So, anyway, so Bethany's early life, she's probably 10 or 12 years older than the Hilton kids. So, she's in this sort of milieu, and she's trying to get famous, and she, like, it's a big deal, right?
Sure.
She's really into being a celebrity. 2005.
Is her assistant.
As her assistant, but you know, for a lot of people in Hollywood,
a little bit of attaché, is that the word?
Cachet.
Well,
I think it connects you to people who are important in Hollywood, right?
Sure.
You work for someone important in Hollywood. Yeah.
Okay, so, fair enough.
In any case, so 2005, she finally lands her big role.
Da-da-da!
Which unfortunately was on a reality TV series. She was on The Apprentice, Martha Stewart.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, she's a trained chef. And so it was like a cooking competition, I guess.
Okay, it is brand new information that Martha Stewart had a show called The Apprentice.
Oh, I'm sure it was part of the Trumptastic line of Apprentice series.
I'm processing that particular... because. I think Martha Stewart's pretty plucky. I like her.
Well, then you'll like this.
Okay, tell me.
So Bethany, trained chef, ends up coming in second in this competition on the show.
Pretty good.
And the prize for first place is to get a job with Martha Stewart. Move to Connecticut. I don't know, but whatever. You'd work for Martha Stewart. Bethany begs her to hire her anyway, because Bethany knows that she is supposed to be a star. Martha is like, dude, you are such a show off and won't hire her. So a little bit humiliating there at the end. Probably
she sure is plucky.
Probably not an unfair assessment of our dear Bethany Frankel. She's a little aimless after this, as you can probably imagine.
Second place is pretty good. You should be able to turn that into something.
Funny story.
Oh, no.
So she moves to New York. She's working as a private chef and decides to start working on a diet book, because like nutrition is like, this is actually probably her life's passion, if we're being honest. Like, being famous, I think, was the way she was going to like put her really not that interesting nutritional philosophy into the world. But
no, because she, I mean, healthy wine, let's talk about low calorie and balance. Like, she's a skinny girl.
Yeah, well, not yet.
Or
but...
is it a...
Okay, no, I mean,
no,
she...
Go
yeah,
ahead. Like, she's... I was going to say, is there a particular disorder, which is, well, as a not skinny girl, anyway, I have a lot of questions when I see the brand.
I believe when talking about any Real Housewife, the question of is there a disorder is fairly, there's a lot you could ponder there.
I mean, brand recognition, A+.
Well, but we're
brand
not, comprehension. We're not there yet. Sure. Okay. We're not there yet.
Sorry.
Okay.
Get excited.
You're jumping. You're jumping ahead.
Jumping ahead.
All right. So while in New York, she became acquainted with Jill Zarin.
Okay.
Who would go on to be part of the first season cast of The Real Housewives of New York.
New York.
And
okay.
Jill Zarin is a huge Martha Stewart fan. So
she
is like starstruck meeting Bethany. And so they like...
Seriously?
Every time they come across each other, Jill is like, Bethany! And like, can't wait to talk
to
her.
Have you met my new BFF?
And so it is Jill Zarin who says, by the way, Bravo has approached me about this show they're doing. It's a spinoff of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills or whatever.
Famous last words.
Orange County, whatever the first one was. New York was going to be second. And so she sits down with the Bravo people and she's like, I have experience in reality TV. I would be a perfect fit. I can do drama. Like, and I don't mean theater drama. I mean drama. So she was instantly hired.
So she pitches herself.
Yeah.
Based on her.
And Jill Zarin like pitches her too. So anyway, they're both season one cast members. Bethany was an interesting choice for a show that was purportedly about the lifestyles of the idle, rich housewives of, you know, New York City. First of all, Bethany was unmarried, so not a housewife at all. Second of all, Bethany was at the time...
She must have done really good in that sit-down meeting to get hired as a non-married person for Real Housewives.
Oh, just wait. She was flat fucking broke. She was living in a tiny one-bedroom apartment. Apparently, it was totally trashed whenever they would bring camera crews over. Like, it looked like a perfectly miserable existence that she was leading, especially compared to all of these wealthy women.
The opposite side of what they're filming.
Basically. So, you know, like, kind of an odd duck in the casting there. In the second season, though, her diet book comes out. Oh. And she has, at this point, built quite a lot of name recognition. Mm-hmm. And she's built a following, particularly among women who are into, you know, lifestyle brands.
Yeah.
Yes. And so her book, Naturally
We're
Thin.
We're into gossip and cocktails, but okay.
Sure. So her book is called Naturally Thin, Unleash Your Skinny Girl and Free Yourself from a Lifetime of Dieting.
Okay, that's, I mean, a good concept.
Instant bestseller.
What? Top of the charts.
Yeah, and so this is, like, here we go. Like, Bethany has, like, accumulated this little bit of fame and purloined it into business, into a
some
business opportunity.
Marketing.
Very, very smart. And actually, at some point, we will also be discussing the Countess Luann of The Real Housewives of New York. And she had a similar thing where she was, like, she's really overt, though, about how famous she wants to be. In any case, the skinny girl thing became her brand. And soon she had I think she had licensed with actual, like, distillers.
Sure.
To make these, like, pre-made skinny girl cocktails
right.
that you can buy in every liquor store in America and a lot of grocery stores.
Yeah.
And
you see them around. I mean, her brand recognition.
Yeah, top notch.
Top notch.
Top notch. Okay, so still single, but now she is a best-selling author.
So she can probably move out
she
of the
is,
hovel.
Yeah. By season three, she finds herself in a very serious relationship, finally.
Love.
Finally, it's love with a pharma executive or something. I don't know. It works. I mean, I think Rudy Giuliani showed us that don't date the pharma reps, but.
Again.
Do
ain't
it.
No party like a pharma girl party because a pharma girl party don't stop.
What?
Thanks, How I Met Your Mother,
yeah,
for
no kidding.
Pretty much daily occasional references of amazing things.
Sure.
Shout out.
This person's name is Jason Hoppe, and Bethany sees an opportunity to enlarge her personal brand and star power and leaves The Real Housewives because Bravo offers her own show called Bethany Getting Married, which follows her and Jason through their engagement. And then through their wedding at the Four Seasons in New York. This was 2010. She was 7 months pregnant at the time of the wedding.
What?
So 7 months pregnant at the time of the wedding.
Okay, again, let's, no shame, no shade. It's not that. Just, this is a lot to process.
There's a camera crew following her around. She's 7 months pregnant. Obviously, she gives birth soon after. Like, Bren, her daughter, is like the first reality TV. Maybe not the first, but.
Okay, hold on. I have some questions.
Yeah. Fire away.
When was the wedding?
It was in 2010. I don't know the month.
Okay, you don't know the month. Presumably, they knew they were getting married before they, you know, booked the fucking plaza.
The Four Seasons.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. Book the Four Seasons. You don't just get a date at the Four Seasons.
Probably not.
I mean, you probably can get your date upped if you're coming with a camera crew, but really? So you know that's happening. Don't you go ahead and do it before you're really showing, or if you're already 7 months in, just write it out to have the day you want?
You know what? I bet if I had watched this show, I could answer these questions. I did not.
These are the mysteries of trashy divorces. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, okay. So daughter Bren is born. Camera crews following them around. And around the same time, Beam Incorporated, makers of Jim Beam and
sure.
many other, I think it's Diageo now or something. It's a conglomerate. It's a booze.
Right.
It's a booze conglomerate. Is like, wow, the women's market in alcohol is really a growth segment. And this skinny girl thing is smart.
Here we go.
So, Beam approaches her and says, we would like to purchase Skinny Girl from you. And she says, hold up. You can purchase the cocktail line, but that brand, Skinny Girl, that's mine.
She's smart.
Super smart.
She's super smart.
They pay her $100 million dollars for the Skinny Girl cocktail line. She is super smart.
I'm sorry, $100
million? $100 million. Yeah. Super smart.
You're not
smart.
Even putting your pinky up to your face.
I know. I was trying to Austin Powers that.
Yeah,
but
wow.
So, all right. So far, we have a complete.
And she still owns the brand.
Owns the brand.
Crap.
So, and she's been rocking and rolling with it ever since.
She's sounding pluckier as the story goes on.
Exactly. So far, we have a smashing success story. Somebody came from like a pretty rough childhood, grows up, sets her sight on the entertainment business, parlays that into like...
Finds a way to...
Yeah, just amazing. The problem...
I'm sorry, like, what are your problems if you have $100 million in the bank, you're happily married with a newborn?
In two words, Jason Hoppe.
Oh, no.
December 2012, so this marriage is not very old. She writes...
2012, okay.
She writes her dear husband a letter and says, "Dear Jason, it turns out that marrying you was not what I wanted to do with my life, and I would now like a divorce." Now, at this time,
they don't even have a conversation?
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I mean, I know what's been reported, but yeah, apparently she sent him a letter asking for a divorce. He did not rush out and file for divorce from her. She did that the following month. Now, they are, at this time, living in a $5 million Tribeca apartment that she has... It was her first big purchase with her new skinny girl money.
Wait, they're living together?
They're married.
So she sends him a note.
Letter.
Take a letter, Maria. So she sends him a letter.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ. And he presumably gets a letter because it may be just on the coffee table.
Probably at the home mailbox, yeah.
Jason.
Coming in from work at the pharmaco.
In the key, on your keys, yeah. Whatevs.
Yeah.
And they, okay, awesome. This is healthy.
Might have been a postcard. I don't know, really.
This is super, super healthy relationship behavior.
Yeah.
There's a reason why you get a divorce.
All right, so let me throw in here some things that were reported about this time in Bethany's life.
Carry on, wayward writer.
So that we don't overplay Bethany being a paragon of good taste or sound judgment in particular.
Because it is trashy divorces.
Trashy divorces. So apparently the 100 millionaire who is still living with her estranged husband, who is sharing in the co-parenting duties of their very young daughter.
Sure.
A month into this divorce process, she starts shopping a book around about being a single mom, about the struggles of single motherhood.
The struggles of single motherhood in your $5 million Tribeca apartment?
Yeah.
Where your husband's still living with
you? I know.
You?
I've known a bunch of single mothers in my life, and this is not how their lives looked. These were not their struggles.
Dear single moms,
yeah.
We have some questions. What the hell?
Anyway, so, you know, Bethany.
So she's
a little trashy.
She's hungry.
She's a little opportunistic, perhaps, is the right word. Like, she'll.
Sure.
But I mean, hey, she's a business lady. She's going to take advantage of stuff. All right. So the serious ass kicker about the Bethany Frankel, Jason Hoppe divorces.
Oh, God.
It took almost 4 years for them to complete the divorce from their less than 2 year long marriage.
I hesitate to ask. Why is that?
Let me just give you a little.
Oh, no.
I have assembled in a semi-chronological order a quick rundown of the lowlights from the next almost 4 years of bullshit, as borrowed from page 6 in the New York Post.
A lowlight.
Okay, so when Bethany filed for divorce,
she
asked. These are pretty standard things. She asked for primary custody of Bren, who was 2. She wanted child support, medical and dental coverage. She wanted Jason.
The regular things.
Yeah, Jason to take out a life insurance policy.
To you. He's a farmer rep.
Right.
Even in a New York market.
Right.
I don't know.
Like, she also wanted exclusive occupancy of the marital residence, which also is not like necessarily going to happen for you right away.
$100 million.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what pharma reps make. I would just
not $100 million.
Not a hundred.
Not $100 million.
Probably not $100 million.
Less than $100 million. A good bit less than $100 million.
Why are you? I think this is on you.
Right. So Jason files his response a few weeks later, and demands every single thing that she has demanded in her suit, plus that Bethany pay his legal and accounting bills for the divorce.
Yeah.
So it is on.
I don't disagree with that.
I mean, I don't know. You could settle this between yourselves and save yourselves a lot of pain.
No, I'm just saying, like, let's think about this.
I totally agree.
Let's reverse gender roles for a second.
Totally.
We would be applauding any woman who just did what Jason did.
Yeah. No, without a doubt.
100%. Like,
no, and even
yes.
the law, even the in New York, if you are the less moneyed spouse, mm-hmm. which Jason Hoppe, who earns about $100,000 a year as a pharma exec, whatever.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Not $100 million a year, $100,000.
I think that's a factor less. So he makes like $100,000 a year, and which is not nothing, but it's. Anyway, Bethany had earned, you know, $100 million the year before.
Mm-mm.
So the judge is like, yeah, you're actually, Miss Frankel, you're going to be paying all of these things.
Absolutely, you are.
They spend the next year living together
in the
Tribeca apartment, co-parenting their kid, probably having very silent meals, and periodically heading to court with their lawyers to yell at each other. Man, like, to be a fly on those walls, you would probably just fall over dead. I mean, it cannot have been comfortable.
Oh, try misery.
Well, gets worse.
Oh, no.
So, January of 2014, Bethany heads to court and has...
So this is 2 years after Take a Letter, Maria? Okay.
1 year. Right. Yeah, because that was December 2012. So, January 2014, so a year later. Bethany goes to court. Says, hey, judge, great news. I am seeing this new guy, and he's wonderful.
Why?
And we are super in love.
Nope.
And I would like my house back, please. Could you kick out the father of my child?
Why don't you find a new place for the father of your child to stay?
Or move yourself out. Yeah, that is not how that works. I mean, maybe some places it is, but in New York, like, if there's not, like, domestic violence happening, then...
So how receptive was judge to that message?
I mean...
what did judge say?
None of the reporting that I found said that the judge laughed her out of court, but it does appear to be a statement of fact that Bethany herself moved out of the Tribeca apartment not long after.
The fact that Bethany was laughed out of court surprised no one.
Narrator's voice. Yeah, that spring. I mean, it's so, and you're completely right. Like, if you flipped this,
good.
We would all be like, yeah, like, in some ways, this is a great story about the successes of feminism, because you have a very rich woman who just gets taken to the cleaners by her husband. Who, like, later that year, like, the judge orders her to pay $100,000 in his legal bills.
Perfect.
That summer, like...
For a New York lawyer with one partner of that divorce earning $100 million, $100,000 doesn't seem all that outrageous.
It does. I don't know. Okay.
Not when you deal in that kind of money.
Yeah.
Like, your divorce lawyers are
still, I'm just saying,
taking millions when you're dealing in that kind of
money. I think the important thing, the reason why these are trashy divorces is because these people didn't have to do it this way. Like, you can negotiate a settlement and spend next to nothing on lawyers.
It's so easy.
Like, an uncontested divorce, you never even have to go to court.
Boom.
You never meet your judge. You just
send
paperwork.
The letter. They get the letter. Yeah. You have a conversation at the table and send in some paperwork.
Yeah. Okay, so 18 months into the divorce, they finally settle their custody fight over their daughter, Bren.
Okay.
After a hearing in which Bethany called Jason white trash on the stand and said that he'd threatened her, and Jason accused her of stripping the apartment of all of Bren's clothing and toys when she moved out and leaving them with a single pot to cook in and a bunch of plastic flatware. It was a little...
I want to react to all of that, but I'm sorry. I got so involved in this story.
Sure.
Is there, like, Bethany has a baby, Bethany gets divorced? Is all this being filmed?
Right, so...
Within...
Okay,
am I jumping ahead again?
You're not. Bethany getting married turned into Bethany Ever After, which ran for 3 seasons and kind of ended when they started their divorce.
Well, yeah. Did they get the letter on film? Jesus Christ.
Bethany leaving Jason.
Bethany questions her life choices.
So I think in this time, so she was still
so bad.
Yeah, she was still insisting she would never go back to the Real Housewives for whatever reason. Like,
done with you.
Done with you. I think she was shopping a like syndicated talk show to the networks around this time. It didn't get picked up, and. You know, and she's also doing licensing stuff with Skinny Girl. Like,
I've got to be really fair. If I ever landed a deal where I had $100 million in the bank, I would not be out searching for my next $100 million.
Yeah, that's fair.
I would be on the beach,
yeah.
Reading books,
yeah.
Chilling with the pets,
yeah.
Painting, writing. Like, not, I,
yeah.
Done.
Yeah, making trashy divorces with, like, in an actual studio.
Like, let's, plenty is enough.
Sure.
Plenty
no,
is enough.
I'm with you again.
I digress.
These are trashy divorces because these people are not necessarily making choices we would make. Okay. So the custody agreement that they reached was a 50-50, very normal actually,
okay,
50-50
perfect.
Parental share. Turned out to be really a great plan for any of them, but probably most of all not for Bren. That fall... Still 2014, the judge was forced to chastise her, Bethany, for posting a picture of herself wearing her now 4-year-old daughter's pajamas on Instagram.
What?
Right. Just
How
let that
skinny are you?
Let that roll around in your head for a minute. She put on a 4-year-old girl's clothing, took a picture of herself, and sent it out to Instagram. Do we want to talk about disorders again? Because... And I'm not saying eating. I'm just saying that's just a weird thing to do.
That type of thing is just right.
I don't know. Maybe Bren is a huge child. I don't know. She's a 6-foot-tall 4-year-old. I don't know. Like, anyway, it's a weird thing.
Why?
Because she's Bethany. I don't know. In mid-2015...
Fame really does do a number on your brain.
Yeah, and seeking fame. In mid-2015, it was reported that Bethany was paying, this is so gross, $12,000 a month in alimony, $3,000 a month in child support, $1,500 a month in Bryn's school costs, $11,000 a month to pay for the apartment that she moved out of rather than stay there with Jason... Plus another $100,000 of Jason's legal fees. His total legal bills at that point were more than $700,000. And though they didn't know this at the time, there was still a year to go in this bullshit.
What? Come on.
Bethany filed an appeal over the alimony payments, which in early 2016, the appeals court was like, yeah, that's a lot. Like, you don't have, you're not on the hook for all of that. Okay, so in... Early 2016, things finally turn around for Bethany a little bit. The appeals court
you
is like...
fighting the inevitable?
No.
She's still in love with the same person that she was in love with that she told the judge, like...
I'm not sure. She dated...
Time's a wasting, man.
She dated Alex Rodriguez at one point, I saw today. That whatever.
A-Rod.
I actually don't know if that was before this or... This may be before her marriage.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay, 2016, the appeals court is like, holy shit, that's a lot of alimony you're paying, so that's off the table. All that was left was fighting over the Tribeca apartment in the divorce that would never end. Basically, Bethany had purchased it through a trust. This would normally make it off limits to the spouse, but she was paying his legal bills. Why not fight it?
Jeez.
So finally... It got resolved. She got the apartment in July of 2016, more than 3.5 years after telling Jason that she wanted a divorce. Bethany was spotted tearing up what looked like legal papers and throwing them into the pool.
Oh,
at the Four Seasons restaurant.
There you go.
Yes. Where she was dining with a fellow Real Housewife. Well, I guess fellow former Real. Anyway, Carol Radziwill.
Radziwill?
Whatever. I know you know who this person is. I'm less clear on that, but...
I actually do know who that person is.
I know you do.
Lee Radziwill is Jackie Kennedy's sister. So, I think...
So
did you say her name was?
There's a Kennedy tie.
There is a Kennedy tie. She married Jackie Kennedy's nephew.
Okay.
Who, Carol, is that her name? Carol?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
She married a prince.
He is a prince.
He was a prince because he's dead now.
Oh, yeah, he was a prince because he is.
Okay, and at some point,
it's a pretty good trashy divorce, actually.
It's we'll probably get there.
Making a note.
Yeah, at some point, probably maybe late 2016, Bethany did return to The Real Housewives.
I'll never season return seven, to that show again.
Right, and she continues to be a fan favorite.
No, I have let this episode slip, and people are really excited about. I didn't know the Real Housewife culture was so amped.
Apparently.
I missed out on that, apparently.
Apparently it's pretty, yeah, yeah. I'm not sad I missed out on it.
Cheers, y'all, for the housewife people in the world.
This technically concludes the divorce portion, but this does not conclude the trashy portion. And I would, if you will indulge me.
The trash lives on.
The trash goes on. I would like to.
They forgot to pick up our trash this week.
I would like to give you.
Talk to me.
Some bits of trash candy from the ensuing months and years. Because Bethany and Jason are parents and they're
After the show.
Yeah, they're co-parenting. Bethany starts dating a guy named Dennis Shields, who is like legal loan shark. I don't know. He loans money. Like, he made his fortune by, so like, you have a personal injury suit and you win and you're due X number of dollars.
Sure.
But it takes a while for that payment to be made. He loans you that. He loans you against the payout.
Oh.
Yeah.
And okay, I see why you said
legal loan shark. I mean, it's...
In the way that you said it.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't get what the tone was, but now I understand.
Kind of a weird dude. He lives in Trump Tower, and he was
fantastic.
Childhood and adult friends with Michael Cohen.
Oh.
Of Trump scandal fame.
I wonder if he's his prison pen pal.
He is not, which you will learn about in a moment.
Oh, what? Talk to me.
Okay, so she starts dating this dude, Dennis Shields. Shields soon begins receiving aggressive emails from Jason Hoppe.
What?
Like, demanding
Scorned
to know
man.
Where Bethany is, and like, is Brynn being properly, like, just like a
Wait,
lot.
But they're divorced.
Yes.
So, really? For the time...
It's controlling. Jason
wow.
Hoppe has some anger issues. In January
oh.
of 2017, Bethany and Dennis walk Brynn to school. Jason confronts them
what?
And starts
no.
screaming at them, I will destroy you, and just shit like that.
Don't you know I have Adonis DNA?
Tiger blood!
Tiger blood! Seriously?
Oh, yeah. So he was arrested. Jason was
street?
Arrested in front of his child's school. Well, actually, I think he was arrested later, but
okay, so
in any
case. That's probably healthy for your kid.
Sure, yes.
Jesus Christ.
He was arrested, charged with harassment and stalking.
Oh,
and
God.
So I know that we personally, in our own lives, we complain a lot about how the criminal justice system deals with women who make complaints about dudes.
Sure. Yes, we do.
Jason Hoppe spends 2017 periodically meeting with prosecutors and negotiating down plea deals.
No.
And in October of 2017, he reaches an agreement.
Am I about to be mad?
Oh, you're going to be pissed. Because there's also, there weren't just some emails to Dennis Shields. There were emails, texts. He was like baiting her like.
So this is not a. I had a bad night at the bar and just lost my head for a second.
This
is repetitive,
constant, and ongoing
stalking behavior.
Yeah, no, he told her he needed a copy of her life insurance policy, like just threatening. So, like,
okay, how lightly did this fucker get off?
So
mad.
The final agreement was that all charges would be dismissed if he would refrain from harassing his ex-wife for 6 months. Boom. However, it did require that he, you know, admit some guilt there. So Bethany sued for full custody of Brynn.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, yeah. You do.
She didn't get full custody
Ooh.
Of Brynn. The judge.
Oh, no.
Good God. Finally, someone steps up for this poor child. The judge orders them to have Brynn see a psychologist.
Good.
Overdue.
Awesome. Good plan.
Your Honor, but
1,000%.
Somebody should. In August of 2018, Dennis Shields.
Has the kid been on TV? Like, past her Bethany Has a Baby show?
So I've seen some clips where Bethany is carrying her as a baby,
like
but not
paparazzi stuff. But like, the kid isn't like a TV star that we just haven't heard about. No.
Hey, it's the Bravo universe.
Jesus
like,
Christ.
Okay, so
hey guys, we don't recommend this. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna find out why Dennis Shields is not Michael Cohen's prison buddy.
Oh no! Oh no!
August of 2018.
This story is just leaping everywhere.
Oh shit! Like, Dennis Shields is found dead in his Trump Tower home after overdosing on OxyContin. He sent his personal assistant. He had taken some Oxy, didn't feel right, told his personal assistant to go down to the pharmacy and get some Narcan.
Oh my God.
So she booked it out of there to do that, came back, and he was collapsed on the floor. And she administered the Narcan, but it didn't work in his case. And
so, holy crap!
Oh yeah.
How old?
50s.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, that opioid epidemic is, I mean, reaching into Trump Tower there. Like, yeah. Anyway.
I am.
Yeah.
Holy.
This story is, I mean, you thought your Henry VIII had a big body count. This is.
Piling them up.
So Dennis Shields' death of a drug overdose and some antics in actual Real Housewives episodes prompt Jason Hoppe to sue for full custody, saying, hey, you know, Bethany clearly has a substance abuse problem. And the judge is like, hey, you're really being a jerk about her boyfriend's death.
Really?
So there's a hearing scheduled for March of 2019. But yeah, the judges are pretty savvy about, and this, I mean, this is a trashy divorce. Like,
well, can you imagine everything a judge has to pre-read before going in 5 fucking years later?
Yeah.
Like, you got, like, I'm annoyed already.
Yeah.
Like, I have to read, I have to familiarize myself with 5 years of fucking court proceedings because you two can't work it the hell out.
That's exactly it, right? Like, Bethany is a super savvy business person who, like, she had a dream.
Jeez.
She made it happen. But when it comes to interpersonal, you know, decision making and relationships, like, clearly she just doesn't.
Wow.
And Jason Hoppe also clearly has some significant self-control issues. So
I have to say, you really represented a trash can on that one.
I mean,
how many trash cans does this one get?
I mean, so she's a super savvy businesswoman, decided that fame would lead to fortune, and she was right. But, you know, in the process, like, that kid cannot be as healthy as that kid could be.
I don't know.
Emotionally.
At what cost happiness?
Yeah.
All right. How many trash cans?
4.5. I mean, she's not Henry VIII. She didn't kill a bunch of spouses, but I mean, that's a pretty trashy divorce.
As a divorce goes, yeah,
Four and a half. Yeah, we'd put her in that range. Sure. Sure.
I'm going to go ahead and give her a solid 4 for sure.
Well, because she put on a 4-year-old's clothing.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, 4.5. Done.
Thanks.
There you go.
Yeah,
check.
Thanks.
Sold.
Right. Well, there you go. That is the trashy divorce. At least the current one of Bethany Frankel. I assume there will be others.
Good Lord. That's a good story. Let's take a quick break. I got the new scandal of Christendom.
Oh, yes.
Coming up.
Yes.
1950s style.
Golden age of Hollywood.
Golden age of press and scandal and trash that
right.
never went away.
Fame.
I'm gonna live forever.
All right. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Emily Higgins and I host Tasteless.
We are watching a topless woman with a very long ponytail do a spin kick of this guy.
Tasteless is a movie podcast that pays tribute to the films no one else wants to talk about.
You're not going in for an ambitious trek through one person's psyche. That's not what you're Crossroads for. That's not what you're at Tasteless for.
In each episode, I take a highly regarded film and compare it to a less beloved movie I recommend instead.
She crawled out of the plants, and maybe the snakes had chewed off half her clothes because now she has a crop top.
Visit tastelesspod.com for more details and to find all the places you can listen.
So, Alicia,
Stacy.
You've been a busy little writer girl on this one.
I have been a busy writer girl.
You want to tell us about the trashiest divorce in Christendom part 2?
Part 2. You're not kidding. So, back in episode 1, I covered Anne Boleyn, the scandal of Christendom.
Sure. Henry VIII.
It took 400 plus years for another one to happen.
Wow.
And today, I bring you the story of the trashy divorce of Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher.
So,
go ahead.
So this became, this is Carrie Fisher's parents, yes? Princess Leia?
Princess Leia's parents.
God rest her soul.
God rest her soul.
And I guess her mom's too.
Hail Leia.
All right. Just want to start at the end.
This is start at the end. That is the very correct place to start.
Okay. I'll admit.
Because we're actually going to end with Carrie Fisher at the end. So you actually did start at the appropriate place.
Yeah. So I will admit, just as I know very little about the Real Housewives, except all the stuff I read about them, I know very little about the Golden Age of Hollywood and there was a lot of trash.
There were murders.
There
are no murders in my story this week. Murder free.
Okay.
They all stayed sexy. They went into the forest. They left the forest murder free.
Okay.
Okay. They were beloved individually. And then they started dating. This love story, if you don't know old Hollywood.
I don't.
This is everything the 1950s was about. They're America's sweethearts. She is lovely and talented. He is a crooner that is living his best life. They meet-ish. Yeah, they do meet.
Well,
they meet and they fall in love. As their daughter, Carrie Fisher, hail Leia, said in her show, Wishful Drinking, they were the Brad and Jen Aniston.
Oh.
They were the Brad Pitt and Jen Aniston of their day, if that gives you any indication to what's coming.
No, but it also, I mean, at the time, like, I'm guessing, like, celebrity culture was happening at the time, but it was probably,
it's
like,
movies,
did they produce that? Did they kind of bring that into being?
They're Brad and Jen.
Gotcha. I mean, okay.
Press is big. It's a big thing, but they are the it couple.
Okay.
Which is when the story goes badly, it goes really, really badly. And the crap part about the story is it's front page news forever. Talk about fame. Like, this is everything. I've seen Debbie Reynolds in interviews to the end of her life, and this is the first question. Okay, but...
Yeah, let's...
It's the biggest tabloid scandal in history since Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn. The new scandal of Christendom's coming, but not yet, because we're going to start with the happy times.
Okay.
Here's the beginning.
Yeah, let's do that.
Debbie Reynolds, star of the silver screen. She's the it girl. She comes from humble beginnings. Dad works for the railroad. Mom's a homemaker. She's born in 1932, which is the Depression era.
Okay.
The family's pretty poor because everybody was. Depression era. They moved to Burbank, California.
Did they ride a train? Did they hop a train car?
They did not work for Saved by the Bell. They moved to Burbank when she's 5. At 16, she wants to win a blouse from a local department store and enters the Miss Burbank pageant.
Okay, this seems so wholesome. I may need to go dirty my soul somehow.
No, this is probably the least trashy... This is a trashy divorce.
Right.
But
it didn't start that way.
Heroines in our podcast go.
Right.
Debbie Reynolds has a fuckload of gumption and I love her. I didn't know I loved her as much as, because I know the aftermath of this story. It was interesting to get into the details of the prequel.
You know, what's interesting.
To what's coming.
Because you told me to look up, because I'm familiar with Debbie Reynolds from the, you know, 2000s, like, you know, like modern. And, you know, she passed away in 2016, but But like, I'm familiar with her as an older person.
You found a picture of her as a younger
person. Yes, you told me.
Like,
yeah, you told me to go look up some. And yeah, like, holy God. Like, she was a stunner.
Holy God. She is everything, and mm-hmm. I'm making a little heart sign in front of my microphone
it's
right
now.
It's
the right thing to do.
She wants to win a blouse. So she enters this pageant because she's like, this blouse is more than I can afford. Maybe I can win it. Not only does she win the blouse, she wins Miss Burbank 1948, as well as a contract with MGM.
Oh, with Martha Stewart.
Nope, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.
Which, okay, so, and at that point, there were, like, big gatekeepers, like MGM.
Is huge.
You had to
MGM
be.
MGM is.
Yeah, you had to be. We would say these days part of that ecosystem if you wanted to work in Hollywood, right? Like,
That's what she did.
Yeah.
No, wait. Like, so she wins the blouse. She wins the pageant.
She wins a contract.
She wins a contract at MGM. She is on set and going to school at the MGM schoolroom.
Oh, that's, again, so wholesome.
With Elizabeth Taylor.
Oh, shit.
Who I will always call Elizabeth. Just FYI, listeners. Elizabeth Taylor hated being called Liz. So only time I hope to say it in this episode. Dominic Dunn. Love him. Clued me in to this fact early in life. I became obsessed with his writing. He'll come back in a future story. Dominic Dunn,
maybe,
original
maybe a few.
Homeboy of Trash Candy. This is my life's work. Anyway, I think about him in a lot of stories I'm writing this season. I digress. MGM, Debbie and Elizabeth, they're BFFs on the set.
Elizabeth Taylor was a movie star already, right?
Like, Elizabeth Taylor became a movie star at 9. And she is quoted as saying, Dominic Dunn has quoted her saying, I can never remember a time where I wasn't famous.
Wow. Okay.
Which is why you call her Elizabeth and not Liz.
Gotcha. So Debbie Reynolds walks onto the lot and heads into a classroom at MGM. And there is one of the most famous people in the world.
Right. Well, like, yeah, MGM,
that's cool. That's normal.
If you have a contract, you're on set, you're taking lessons, you're taking voice lessons, you're taking, you know, you're learning how to be a star, and they may put you in bit roles and stuff, but they have a lot of contract players that they've signed that they start to recycle, like, who's going to be the next hot thing? Louis Mayer, head of MGM, one day takes note of Debbie's amazing voice, because Debbie Reynolds can sing like a bird. And he says to her, you're going to star in a movie with Gene Kelly. And she says, I don't dance. And he says, you will.
Oh. Well,
so Debbie Reynolds wasn't a dancer.
She's like the original Fame.
No. Fame! I'm gonna make my feet bleed. Hold on, let me get to that part.
Okay.
Debbie Reynolds wasn't a dancer when she made Singing in the Rain. And Gene Kelly, apparently when he hears this news, insults her for her lack of dancing experience, insulting her. In a subsequent encounter with Fred Astaire, he found Debbie Reynolds crying under a piano because Gene Kelly has been like, you don't dance. You can't dance even if you want to. I don't know what the song is. Anyway, Fred Astaire, here's what happens, volunteers to help her learn dancing so she can do this role. Debbie Reynolds trains daily for 5 months to learn how to dance. Her feet bleed in training every day. They bleed in filming. She does star in Singing in the Rain, which comes out in 1952. Gene Kelly does later admit that he had not been kind, and was surprised she was still willing to talk to him afterwards. So, there you go. Years later, just to give you, since we're starting at the end, to go to the... It's a TARDIS of an episode. Debbie Reynolds was quoted as saying, Singing in the Rain and childbirth were the two hardest things I've ever done in my life. So that tells you something.
Yeah.
Debbie Reynolds proceeds to work steadily through the 50s, making 5 more films through 1954, things are good. She's sailing along. She is happy working. She's blonde in California and an MGM star.
Right. Right. So, okay.
Things are good.
Yeah.
Eddie Fisher.
Ah.
The most successful pop singles artist in the first half of the 1950s. He sells millions of records, hosts his own TV show, born in Philadelphia in 1928. He's the fourth of seven kids. Got a big family. He's beloved. They call him Sonny Boy. He has some talent with singing, and they nurture it, and he begins to enter some amateur contests, which he normally wins. Makes his radio debut, becomes a local star in Philadelphia.
Did he win a lot of blouses?
I don't know how many blouses he won. Like Charlie Sheen, he leaves his senior year of high school to pursue his musical career. He signs with RCA Victor. Off he goes. Is recording, radio star, kind of building his career. In 1951, he gets drafted and serves in active duty for a year. I guess that's the Korean War.
Sounds right, yeah.
He proceeds the next few years to be the official vocal soloist for the U.S. Army Band. His strong and melodious tenor, quote, made him a teen idol, one of the most popular singers in the 1950s. Here's some stats. He had 17 songs in the top 10 on the music charts between 1950 and 1956.
Wow.
35 songs in the top 40.
Whoa.
Between 1950 and 1956.
Wow. Okay. So he was
huge.
Everywhere. Okay.
But isn't it funny that we don't recall him as one of the great vocal crooners? Aren't you hooked as maybe to know why?
Okay. Go ahead.
Aha. Break out the wedding bells.
Oh.
Debbie and Eddie. They meet.
Boom.
They fall in love. They marry September 26th, 1955.
All right. So they're like top of the world.
Both of them are individually top of the world. They meet, they marry. They are the love affair that the world has waited for.
Sure.
They're everything. In later interviews, she implies she really just was ready to have sex, but she said it much classier than that.
Sure.
Like, good girls waited. Mm-hmm.
Got tired of waiting.
Got tired of waiting. Sometimes good girls get tired of waiting.
Sure.
So their daughter, Carrie, woohoo, was born in 1956. Their son, Todd, is born in 1958. Their son, Todd, is named after Eddie's best friend, Mike Todd.
Okay.
So just make a note of that
okay.
name.
So we'll matter later. Okay.
Pay attention to that detail. It will come up soon. Narrator voice.
Sure.
All right. So they're groovy. They have two babies. They're living the Hollywood dream. They are photographed, interviewed. They come together to do popular programs. Their footage on What's My Line is entirely weird, but super cute, too. We wish those kids the best, and that's the end of the story, right?
Oh, great story. Gosh.
Done.
Old Hollywood love.
Nope.
Oh, there's more.
Ha. It's the quickest trashy divorces in history. So let me preface this by saying that I'm really wary of couples with couple best friends. You got to be careful.
Interesting.
Who your couple is going to couple with, because they can be dangerous.
Yeah, okay.
And here begins the sordid tale.
Oh.
Here's where the train starts shaking on the tracks.
All right. What happened?
Eddie Fisher and a dude named Mike Todd are BFFs.
Sure. His
bros.
Yeah. Son is named for Todd. Mike
Son
Todd.
Is named for Mike Todd. Mike Todd is a hotshot Hollywood producer. He's a mover and shaker in Hollywood, entrepreneur. He's older than Eddie. He's in his late 40s. Eddie's in his early 20s. But he's distinguished and dashing. And
he's a bit of a mentor.
This is literally written in my notes in capital letters. Eddie loves him. He actively copies him. He looks up to him. Is this mythical hero god dude bro. Whatever Mike Todd orders to drink, Eddie orders that to drink.
Mm.
However he orders his steak, medium rare, well done, flambé, whatever. That's how Eddie orders his steak.
Okay, so Mike Todd is the classy father figure training.
Correct.
Eddie Fisher, he's going to teach you how to live.
I'm going to teach you how to live, kid. Same drink, same dinner. Now remember Debbie and Elizabeth Taylor, old school chums from
sure.
the MGM studio lot. As Elizabeth is divorcing her second husband, she begins to scope out her third husband and begins to date Mike Todd. Elizabeth and Debbie are friends. Mike and Eddie Fisher are friends. Debbie and Eddie are married. Yay! Woohoo!
Couples friends.
Couple friends. They're united. The stars line up that this is going to be the best couple friendship in history. And it goes like that for a while. Elizabeth Taylor and Mike Todd do marry in 1957. It is the third marriage for both. Eddie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds are best man and matron of honor at their wedding in Acapulco. Debbie washes Elizabeth's hair that morning, gets her dressed. Like, they really have a genuine friendship. Elizabeth Taylor and Mike Todd have a daughter in 1957. Things are great. End of story.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. That was great.
Third time's not the charm. And our story is about to take a sad turn. Mm. I don't have a murder. I do have a death. Yeah. Shit. Murder-free, not death-free.
Sure.
On March 22nd, 1958, Mike Todd's private plane, the Liz, crashed in New Mexico. Yikes. The plane had engine failure, went out of control, killing all four on board. Mike Todd was on his way to accept a Friars Club award. Elizabeth Taylor wanted to travel with him, and she got a cold, and he was like, nope, you're not going. It was bad. That morning, Debbie wakes up, reads the news, wakes Eddie up. They head over to Elizabeth's home.
Sure.
Doctors have arrived. She's hysterical, like you would be.
Yeah.
Debbie, genuine halo lady that she is, leaves Eddie there to console Elizabeth Taylor.
Sure.
Now, remember Elizabeth Taylor. This is March. Elizabeth Taylor had a baby in August. So Debbie takes all the kids and the nurses, sets up camp at their house. Even Elizabeth's previous second husband, Michael Wilding, stays with Debbie Reynolds. Like, this girl is pure fucking sunshine.
Well, and Elizabeth Taylor and Eddie, they were the closest people to Mike Todd.
They are grieving Mike Todd, yeah, and honestly want to find a way to keep him alive.
Right.
Which Debbie in later interviews says she was surprised. Like, she really thought she and Elizabeth were friends and that she was doing the right thing by sending Eddie to Elizabeth to comfort her after the death of Mike Todd.
How did that go for them?
Well, in every interview, like, Debbie is so, like, speaks glowingly about Mike Todd and that she's doing the right thing. But, you know what's going to happen. Enter Christendom scandal. Elizabeth and Eddie fall in love, or at least a shared grief that they think is love.
The show is called Trashy Divorces.
Right.
So,
and they're not really hiding it. Rumors, which become truths. Begin goodbye husband, yeah, hello scandal,
yeah,
and welcome to the press being up in your business non fucking stop.
So it's not the birth of the tabloids, because the tabloids have been around for a long time, but yeah, this was
intensifies, this was that glare,
like
a 1,000-watt bulbs.
Everybody loves a sex scandal.
No, this is so 1958-ish. I'm going to tell you, like, how Debbie found out about it, which is super scandalous, but Jesus, it's bad. But, I mean, this is, the divorce doesn't happen. It's,
yes.
Hold on.
Okay. Sorry. Jumping ahead.
So, there's some footage of her on the Oprah Winfrey Show from 2011, and Debbie Reynolds recalls the moment she finds out about the affair. Apparently, Elizabeth Taylor went to New York for something, and all of a sudden, Eddie needs to go to
important business in New York.
The greatest city in the world. So, Debbie explained she was looking for Eddie. I'd heard the rumors that he'd gone to New York for some business, but I didn't know it was monkey business. I called his room. He wasn't there. So, I called Elizabeth's room, and Eddie took the call.
Oh.
Then I heard Elizabeth saying, who is it, darling?
Oh.
And I said, would you just roll over and put Elizabeth on the phone?
Oh.
So he did, but she wouldn't take the call. The whole thing was so sad because Elizabeth was in deep mourning and she really turned to Eddie out of this need. I don't blame Elizabeth now that I have more of a brain about it.
So, wow, like, she really is a halo person.
Yeah, I mean, this is 2011. Like, She's sure. a saint.
Decades to so work past it.
This affair is public scandal. Elizabeth Taylor is branded a homewrecker.
Oh, sure.
She is the Anne Boleyn to Debbie Reynolds, Catherine of Aragon. People are crazy over this scandal. And the press is without a heart. They want the story. Every dirty bit of this story comes out in the public eye. Looking back at Modern Screen and all the Mac, like, they are the cover photo fodder for a year.
Jesus.
Debbie thinks this is going to be a fling. She doesn't believe in divorce. She's that hesitant. Seems She's reasonable. Like, all right, you're going to figure out what I got two kids. We're working. We're on top of the world. Like, do what you need to do, but come on. When questioned about the possibility that Debbie might refuse a divorce, here's the scandal from the other side of the press. Elizabeth Taylor said, at first, Debbie was very much hurt, but I think now the hurt is left and she will consent to Eddie getting a divorce here. Right? Takes a lot of nerve.
Well, that. Well, so one thing that's fascinating about that is that I'm pretty sure that in every state in America now, you don't need your spouse's that's a very weird way to talk about divorce.
Wait for
now,
it.
But
in but, a Saturday yeah. Evening Post article, we'll link to it. I'm going to read the following quote about how Debbie summed up the divorce came out. When I came home from Europe, people kept asking me, will you give Eddie a divorce or won't you? It wasn't a new question. Eddie had asked me before I'd said no. But when I was coming home on that plane, I knew there'd be people waiting for me at the airport. I prepared a last statement on the subject. It was this. Listen to this. This is beautiful. The position in which I am placed makes it necessary for me to give my consent, but they would have gotten married anyway.
Oh, shit.
Boom. Drops mic. Catherine of Aragon, right? Like, boom.
Man.
It is
as false as his claim that right? We were separated when he took up with her.
God. Trashy divorces is awesome.
Okay.
I tried to do, this is still her talking, I tried to do everything and think of everything as I will 5 or 10 years from now. If I had talked or acted as I felt in the moment, I might have said and done the wrong things. Unfortunately, our situation became public property. If it hadn't, I think the three of us could have dealt with it in a mannerly way. I probably would have said no to a divorce, but perhaps it all would have worked out differently.
This is like the mirror image of Bethany Frankel. Like, this is a cerebral, compassionate, you know, like, deep thinking, secure person who's trying to work through a tough...
The last line, because it was dumped in the public's lap by the other people involved, I had no choice.
Yeah.
So, like, it reaches its climax. Debbie agrees to a divorce after a year of hesitation. Front page news.
Sure.
She agrees to a quick divorce so her husband could embark on his second marital adventure.
Woo!
This time with Elizabeth Taylor. Debbie Reynolds, Eddie Fisher, divorce May of 1959. I can't get an exact day on this. I had it and I deleted it anyway. I think it's early May, like May 2nd, May 4th. Elizabeth Taylor and Eddie Fisher were married at the Temple Beth Shalom in Las Vegas, May 12th.
I mean, you can't just get any old date at the Temple Beth Shalom. I'm kidding.
I mean, like, Henry VIII was fast whipping around after he murdered Anne Boleyn to marry Jane Seymour. That was the 18th to the 30th, 12 days. We've got a lot of charts to start upkeeping on.
Yeah,
trashy
no kidding.
Divorces.
No kidding.
All right.
We'll get some race car graphics.
This scandal, because the press has no heart, has made it their business. This scandal is so great that Fisher's show is canceled. And at this point, I'm going to leave Eddie here.
Okay.
Because he's going to be continued in a future episode. Debbie and Eddie are divorced.
Multi-parter.
Stay tuned.
Okay.
His show's canceled, but here's an interesting note to point as we talk about gender and how it fits. this triangle of the three of them, right? Brad, Jen, Angelina, Eddie, Debbie, Liz. They're the OG of this triangle. In terms of cold hard cash, the ladies upped their price at the box office. So Debbie Reynolds leapt to $125,000 a picture, then to $250,000. Which is huge money.
Today's money, that's got to be gigantic.
More than any other movie star was making. Elizabeth Taylor zooms in from $500,000 to $750,000, then to $1 million. She was the first $1 million contract for an actress in Cleopatra in 62.
Wow.
Debbie Reynolds soon signed a similar contract for $1 million for 3 TV appearances.
Wow.
Right? Like, the women take off. Eddie is trashed, which is as the top singing vocalist of the early 1950s.
Sure, he's just
persona
non grata.
Does anybody ever hear about Eddie Fisher and his great crooner tunes? No.
I honestly, yeah.
Tony Bennett, Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr. There are a million crooner legends are not Eddie Fisher.
We just came through the almost unendurable holiday season where I ended up in too many rooms where people were playing the Christmas music TV channel.
Bing Crosby.
Yeah.
Perry Cuomo.
Yeah, like, I don't recall
how
Eddie Fisher.
How many times have you ever heard Eddie Fisher on your Muzak cable info music? It doesn't happen.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Anyway.
Doesn't ring
so
a bell.
So it works out for the ladies, but not for him.
Okay.
So Debbie Reynolds is left to raise 2 kids. Remember them?
Yeah.
Carrie and Todd.
Carrie and Todd.
She knows she steadily works. She does get a rebound Oscar nod for her role as Molly Brown in 1964 Molly Brown.
Yeah, I've been to the Molly Brown house in Denver.
Debbie Reynolds, if nothing else, is Charlotte in Charlotte's Web.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
She plays the role
in the cartoon,
Charlotte's Web.
Love it.
She's TV, movies, Broadway. She does get remarried again in 1960. That marriage lasts till 73. In 1975, Debbie marries a third time. It does end in 1996. But Debbie's working and kicking ass. And I want to talk about 2 groovy things and leave the scandal for a second.
Okay.
Because I love her. I love Debbie Reynolds.
Okay.
One cool thing, she founds a organization called the Thalians in 1955. It's an organization that provides mental health services from pediatric to geriatrics in L.A. She's elected president in 1957 and remains involved for the rest of her life in this organization. Way to go. In 1979, she opens a dance studio in North Hollywood. Never forgetting how dancing really changed her life. It provides opportunities for all kinds of dancers they may not get in a regular studio. So dancers who are looking to film.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Still open.
Oh, wow.
Here's a little rap. So Debbie and Elizabeth, remember those friends from the MGM BFF lot?
Seems like that's done.
They're estranged for a few years.
I would think.
But they reconnect when Debbie remarries in 1960, she and her new husband go on a cruise. They're on the Queen Elizabeth II. And Debbie's coming in and she sees all this luggage. She's like, whoa. She asks the porter, like, is the Queen on board? They're like, no, not the Queen, but Elizabeth Taylor. Holy crap. Now Debbie Reynolds is stuck on a fucking boat with Elizabeth Taylor. They hadn't seen each other. Nobody knows what to say.
And she and Eddie are done by now?
They're divorced. They're done. He's done. We're done talking about... I mean, he's going to come back.
Right. We'll meet him again.
We will. Until we meet again. So Debbie Reynolds is talking to her new husband. Like, oh, we haven't seen each other. This is so silly. This is dumb. So they end up sending each other notes on board. Take a letter, Maria. Like, I send her a note. She sends me a note. They end up getting together to talk about this, have a drink, whatevs. Like, this is silly. Let's get this over with. They grew up together. They shouldn't break up a friendship over a man. They reunite their friendship. Here's the beauty of the story. Elizabeth Taylor and Debbie Reynolds reunite and resume their friendship. They socially interact through the rest of their lives. Debbie went to Elizabeth Taylor's first AIDS benefit in the 1980s. They are a little tentative at first, but they grow more solid through the years. When Debbie was interviewed, she said she could understand being dumped for the world's most beautiful woman.
Yeah, we will put pictures of both of these women from this both period. Lovely. They are, it's amazing. Like, they were so beautiful.
There's literally hours and pages, like getting back to fame, of this footage. And Debbie talked about this for years. So did Carrie Fisher. So did Elizabeth Taylor. Debbie Reynolds on The View in 2011 had some really classic lines. Best friends should stick together and you move on. She's also quoted, like, women stick together. And she really liked that strong woman overcoming thing. And they became BFFs. Here's another hot take, which is pertinent to her story, but I really love this line. You can't make a man leave a woman unless he wants to go.
I mean, wise words. Yeah, yeah, true story.
Trashy divorce tip, number whatever.
Yeah.
They love each other so much, they even mocked Eddie Fisher. Carrie Fisher wrote a movie for them called These Old Broads, in which their characters ridiculed the ex-husband they shared called Freddie.
Oh, Freddie. Very different from Eddie. Okay.
Elizabeth Taylor, who is a renowned collector of both husbands and jewels, when she died, left Debbie a suite of jewels, which includes an earring, a pin, and a ring. Like, they really were fond of each other and developed their friendship again. Eddie Fisher, be fucking damned. Debbie Reynolds passed away December 28th, 2016, one day after her beloved daughter, Carrie Fisher, died.
Leia for life.
Leia for life. And as much, like, maybe I will one day cover the trashy divorce of Carrie Fisher and Paul Simon.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't want to, because I would end up being just as sympathetic and nice and wonderful, but... maybe we throw in some sweet trash candy, like the stuff that gets thrown in the trash can that's good.
No, I like
every
that,
once in a while.
I like that you look for what's tender in the people you write about. I look for what's funny, and it's not, I'm sure it's not nice. I'm sure my stories are not nice, but
I think it's about that. Like, I'm in love with Debbie Reynolds. Like, anyway, I may cover Carrie Fisher and Paul Simon one day. We do have another music one coming up, which I'm knee deep into research with and love. But I will pay a little bit of homage. So your visual representation of my auditory representation of trashy divorces. Pay a little homage to a song I think about a lot when I'm writing these stories. Paul Simon made a love relationship divorce song about Carrie Fisher called Hearts and Bones, which is, even Carrie Fisher said it was the best breakup song ever recorded.
We'll put it on the website.
It's delicious. And if you really want to spin down a rabbit hole, Adam Duritz, James Campion have a podcast called Underwater Sunshine. And I want to say in episode number 4, they do a bit about Paul Simon and dissect the song. And to hear, you know me, I'm a Counting Crows girl forever and there's nothing better. But to hear Adam Duritz break down as a songwriter Paul Simon's Hearts and Bones song, which is legit, God, the best arc of a relationship song in the history. I like, you see me, I cry.
We'll put it on the website.
It's so good. Best breakup song in the world. Carrie Fisher, Hell of a Broad. I see where she gets it from. Her mom was too. I don't know if we can add halos to the trash can rating. Eddie Fisher's a fuck, whatever. Like, however many trash cans you want to get. But I want to give Debbie Reynolds some halos because she's a genuine treasure. I love her.
I'll allow that.
I love her.
Yeah. I mean,
talk about some gumption and some resolve and steadily working and taking new chances.
Yeah,
and
no, it sounds like she got hit with trash but was never herself trashy. Like, that's
and she
amazing.
She entirely handled herself classily. And, yeah. Like, it's funny to watch the interviews because seriously, first question every interview, I would be so mad. I would put that in my rider, but I guess if that's your cachet, like, she never wanted
Yeah.
Come on, I'm in love. I have two kids, and now my BFF is... You've got to be kidding me. This is...
shoved into this scandal and...
Fame press fodder for the late 1950s, and people get really bent still about this scandal. Like, I knew about this when I was a child because my grandmother was still bent in the 1970s that Debbie Reynolds got screwed. That is my trashy divorce for the week.
I mean, that's a good one. That is a classic one.
And wait, that's only the prequel.
Oh, right,
that's
right.
That's the Star Wars to your Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi that's coming.
All right.
That is the prequel to the future episode of marrying the same person twice.
Oh, right, la, la, la. Right. I think I have some research to do for that one.
Thanks, y'all, for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thanks for picking up the trash candy of another episode of Trashy Divorces.
Yeah, we'll be back next Sunday.
We still don't have a sign-off. I'm going to say it again. Stay single. Don't get married.
Okay. And we'll see you next week.
Keep it trashy.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.
Trashy Divorces is brought to you by Hemlock Creatives.
Our music is by the extra super fabulous Ratsy. Check out her store at Ratsy's store on Instagram. Our art is by the amazing Sydney Smith. Visit her portfolio at sydneyvsmith.carbonmade.com.
Learn more at trashydivorces.com. Join our Trashy Divorces Facebook group and follow us at Trashy Divorces on Twitter, Instagram, and we have a YouTube.
And if you're enjoying the pod, tell a friend. It really helps us, and let's face it, your friends will like you better for it.
Almost certainly.
No, they may like you worse, but...
they almost certainly will like you better.
It's trash candy. It's so much fun.